I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com. On March 28, 2014, Dave Willetts suffered a heart attack at work and died at the hospital later that day. Luckily for him and for us, he was revived every single time and he awoke from his surgery against all odds, and he vowed never to take another day for granted. So Dave had thought himself in pretty good shape. He was 53 years old. He'd lost a bunch of weight. He was working out three times a week. So he quickly realized that all his assumptions about how to have a healthy heart were flawed. So he started doing his own research, as many of us do, and one thing led to another, which finally led him to Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. So while he was recuperating, he watched Forks Over Knives, he watched everything that Dr. Esselstyn had ever done on YouTube, and he ordered the book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, via Amazon Next Day Delivery. As soon as it arrived, he read through it and sent a quick email to the email address listed at the back of the book. And 9:30 in the morning, Dave's cell phone rang with an Ohio phone number. "This is Dr. Esselstyn," said the voice, and they had a conversation. And that was the beginning of Dave's return to life. In our conversation, Dave and I talk about his bumpy transition to plant-based diet, what he does now, how he took up running and has turned into a running beast, and his, if they weren't so tragic, really funny interactions with the medical profession, with cardiology in particular, and cardiology's assumption that even if an Esselstyn-type diet is the best one that people could use, it's not even mentioned because the assumption is no one's really going to do it. I got to hang out with Dave this summer at Plantstock at the Esselstyn's farm in upstate New York, where Dave was a speaker and where he told his very moving and very inspiring story to the several hundred people who gathered there under the tent, and I wanted him to tell it to us today. So without further ado, Dave Willetts, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be here.
So I wanted to start this conversation by having you tell us about your death. Is that all right?
That's fine. That's a probably a good place to start the conversation, I guess.
Cool. So what happened? And when did, how long ago?
Well, it's been about 2.5 years ago, March 28th, 2014. It was just a typical day at work, and got out of a meeting, was headed back to my office, and while I was walking down the aisleway, I just felt a tingly feeling in my body, which was kind of strange to me. And it kind of like stopped me in my tracks, and I kind of like looked down at my body like, "What are you doing?" And continued on back to my office, and that sensation still kind of stayed there, and sat down at my desk and kicked back and kind of like put my hands behind my head and trying to assess what was going on. But that made me a little bit lightheaded, so I leaned forward and that felt a little bit better. But still, you know, something was different. And then I started to perspire a little bit, which isn't like me unless I'm like doing some type of a physical activity. So I decided to pick up the phone and call HR and ask her if she had a minute to come back. And she says, sure. And she comes back. She says, what's up? And I says, I'm just not, I'm not feeling too good. She says, well, do you want me to drive you somewhere or call somebody? I'm like, yeah, why don't you call 911? She said, really? I said, yeah, something's just not right, which is not like me at all. So she calls 911, and we coordinate where they come to and stuff. And the emergency crew gets there and asks me a lot of questions and stuff. And they hooked up a 12-lead to me, and he says to me, he says, yeah, it appears that you're having a heart attack. I'm like, that's cool. You know, to me, that it just meant there's some blockage. So let's go find out what the blockage is and get it taken care of. And so they transport me to the hospital, and they're in communications with the ER department the whole time. Probably about a 20-25 minute trip. And we get to the ER, and there is a team ready to go to work on me. They take off my clothes, cut off my shirt, and slap some pads on me, and doing the incoming questions, you know, seeing if that's my correct name and my address and make sure all that matches. And so I said, we're going to, you know, take you into the cath lab and find out what's going on. I'm like, all right. And we had some fun and games in there. I kind of like blew their mind a little bit with the calmness that I had. But ultimately we go up to the cath lab, and as soon as I go into the room, the doctor comes over. And he just looks out down at me. He says, Mr. Willis, you okay? Are you okay? He said, cough. Make yourself cough. And I'm looking up at him. I can hear everything that he's saying. And I'm trying to, like, muster up a cough, but I couldn't do anything. I just felt my whole body just go completely numb from head to toe. And just, a loud ringing in my ear. And next thing I remember, I something kind of, like, jarred me. And I'm like, pop my head up, and I'm like looking around the room, and I see everybody there, all the nurses, the doctors still there. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And all of a sudden I heard clear. I'm like, crap, they're going to shock me. And it's like, bam, sure enough, man. It felt like a Mack truck just like ran right over me. And then about 25 minutes later, I'm in the recovery room, and I looked at my 18-year-old son, and I said, hey, what's up? He says, you need 3 stents. I'm like, oh, cool. When am I going to get those? He said, they already put them in you. He said, you flatlined 3 times. They had to shock you 11 times. They didn't think you were going to make it. So that kind of like put things into perspective. And I realized how fortunate I was to even be there. So,
that's quite a tale. And one of the things that strikes me is, like, you seemed pretty unconcerned through most of it. You know, I mean, you did ask to call 911 instead of, you know, hey, bring me an aspirin and a glass of water. But you said, you know, you were joking around when you heard you're having a heart attack. You're like, well, that's cool. Like, what was your attitude at that point towards, you know, your emergent sudden change in your condition?
Well, you know, to be honest, it wasn't, I don't know how I would have reacted had it been the atypical heart attack, I guess. You know, like the elephant sitting on your chest or having trouble breathing or something. But I, you know, when it started, I didn't realize I was having a heart attack. That didn't even really cross my mind. Because I was in pretty good shape at the time. I mean, I was 175 pounds. I just lost like 40 pounds like 7 months prior to that, and had kept it off and was working out like 3 or 4 days a week and pretty active and was feeling really good. So a heart attack wasn't even an afterthought. You know, it's like I just knew that something was wrong. So that probably helped not put me in any type of a panic mode, although I'm a pretty laid back guy anyway. So but yeah, just that you know, the I wasn't overwhelmed by any strange sensations. So I mean, that's what helped me able to stay so calm. And probably, I mean, that's one of the things that helped save my life is by staying calm during the whole process, because, you know, the cardiologist told me a few weeks later, you know, that if I would have given myself any anxiety, I probably wouldn't have made it to where I did. So.
So after your son told you that you'd flatlined all those times and you had stents and you had to be, you know, shocked back, did you have some sort of emotional reaction at that point? Like once the imminent situation had resolved?
Definitely. When he said that, I mean, it kind of reality, it was almost instantaneous, where it just kind of like, I mean, just thinking about it now, I mean, I could, you know, it was definitely an emotional experience that I was kind of like digesting. And, you know, from that point on, probably for the, I mean, it helped with my, you know, both my boys were there and my sister were there, you know, so it kind of like helped take my mind off of things. But, once I got into the room and everybody left and just pondering on the set of events that took place, it was a pretty emotional experience for me, you know, just to realize that, you know, my life ended or could have ended for good if it wasn't for awesome technology. Just that fast. I mean, you know, here I was at work and even during lunch at that particular day, I went to the gym and worked out. You know, it was just a normal routine day. And for just a routine day to, you know, end or almost end as abruptly as it did at 2:30 in the afternoon or whatever the time it was, you know, it's just, it's just kind of mind boggling that, you know, that we walk through life. We kind of like take every day for granted, you know, to a certain extent. You know, you don't think about dying, you know, and I was 53 years old. So I, you know, it didn't even, you know, death never, you just don't think about it, you know, but now there's not a day that goes by that, that I don't remember that entire process. I mean, every single day for the last 2.5 years, I mean, I relive that at some point in time during the day in my mind and realizing how blessed I am to even be here. And it really gives you a totally different appreciation of every moment of your life, you know, once you've experienced something like that.
Mm. So right after it happened, you said you had lost weight, you were working out, you, I guess, on the outside were kind of the picture of health and doing things right. In our culture, there's an assumption that, like, you're going to get a heart attack or not, you're going to get cancer or not, there's not really much you can do about it. So, like, obviously, you know, you've changed a lot of things since then, but right when it happened, did you wonder, and did your doctors kind of explain things to you, or was it just viewed as, well, that's a thing that happens?
Well, my, I didn't have a doctor at the time, because I was a pretty healthy guy and I'm your typical male that, don't really do doctors. I'll get over whatever ailment comes over me, and then the cardiologist that saved my life, I didn't get to talk to him because he left on a out of the country excursion right after, so I never got to see him until like 2 weeks later. So as far as the I was in the hospital for 5 days, and you know, they went over the, you know, you had a heart attack, you know, this is, you know, what you need to do from here on out. And a lot of do's and don'ts and, you know, prescription medications that you're going to take the rest of your life and this type of information. But, luckily for me, my sister, when I had the heart attack, she lives nearby, and she was at the hospital, but she had a trip planned down to Hippocrates down in Florida. And so the next day she went down to Hippocrates and talked to a couple of doctors down there and about what I experienced. And she sent me a text and she said, you know, the doctor said to check into a vegetarian or a Mediterranean diet. And I'm like, okay. So when I did get out of the hospital, I started Googling vegetarian Mediterranean diet. And I came across a little Pareto chart that showed vegetarian on the low side and then Mediterranean a little bit better. And then plant-based was better than that. And I'm like, well, what's this plant-based all about? You know, that looks like it's the best one. So I started researching, plant-based nutrition and, came across a book called Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease by, Dr. Esselstyn, who I had never heard of at the time. I'm like, that's what I want to know right there. You know, it's like, prevent. Reverse. I mean, I'm all for that. So I sent away for the book, for like next day delivery on Amazon because I wanted to read it like right now. Cause I had a little bit of time to kill, you know, so I couldn't go to work for a few weeks. So, and then at the same time, there was a place where if you wanted more information, you could, email, this email address, but it had to be heart specific and it had to be short, you know? So I just sent a short thing, something in the likes of, you know, three flat lines, 11 shocks, massive heart attack. I never want to experience this again. What do I have to do to prevent it?
And that was, and that I, was to someone from the Esselstyn organization.
Yeah. I didn't know exactly where it was going to, but, ultimately that's what it ended up being. And after I sent that, I wanted to find out who this, the Dr. Esselstyn guy was. And, so I hopped on Google and found all kinds of stuff on YouTube and spent the next several hours watching plenty of presentations that he'd given at different spots. And then I believe that that exposed me to the Forks Over Knives documentary. And so I watched that that particular night and then fell asleep. And it was probably 1 or 2 in the morning when I fell asleep. And then my phone rang at about 9:30 in the morning, and I looked at the phone, and there was a call from Ohio. I'm like, who the heck's calling me from Ohio? And so I was like, hello. And he said, yeah, this is Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. And I'm like, shut up, it is not, man. But I knew that it was because he's got a very distinctive voice. You know, you can't, you know, after watching hours of his presentation, I mean, it clearly was Dr. Esselstyn. So I quickly grabbed my iPad and put my phone on speaker and I recorded the thing because I knew that I wasn't going to remember anything. and that ended up being a 25-minute phone conversation. From that point, I hung up the phone. I went right across the street at the grocery store that I lived by at the time and bought every leafy green there was that you could buy and didn't even have room to fit in the refrigerator, but I had no idea what to do with it. Most of it went bad because I couldn't even remember what I bought. You know, it's all labeled stuff when you go to the grocery store, you know, but when you bring that stuff home, there's no labels on it or anything, you know, it's just like some greens. And it's like, okay, well, I don't even know what to look up to on how to cook this because I don't know what it is. But that was the start of my excursion. But as far as the, you know, the doctors and stuff, they didn't, you know, they said to follow, you know, look for the heart smart, you know, your lean meats and, you know, all that stuff. They really didn't have any dietary suggestions other than the heart smart menu and what have you. So, but the first time that I saw my cardiologist, I was already 2 weeks into about a week and a half into being plant-based. And that was a pretty interesting discussion when I did talk to him, because they had another stent scheduled for me 2 weeks later in my Widowmaker, because what I thought they said was about a 70% blockage when I was in the hospital. Turned out to be a little bit more than that when I talked to my cardiologist, but I had postponed the additional stent until I was able to talk to the cardiologist out of respect for him, because I felt that, you know, plant-based, I might be able to avoid, you know, having another stent. So when I did talk to him and told him what I was doing, you know, he said, you know, be careful with that stuff, you know, but, you know, you seem like a pretty motivated person, and, you know, you might be one of those 3% that is able to do something like that. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, man. It's like, you are aware that this is a potential cure, but you already predetermined, you know, that, you know, that most people aren't going to do it, so you don't even tell them about it. You know, to me, that was just like mind-boggling. But the good news is since then, he has seen my numbers, and I just saw him about a week and a half ago, and he says, you know, they did all the tests and stuff, and everything was just stellar. And he says, so not taking any medication? I'm like, nope. He says, still plant-based? I says, yep. He says, well, you look great. You're healthier than I am. See you in a year. So even though he acknowledges that what I'm doing has worked, I don't know if he's passing that on to his current patients or future patients, because that would be the ultimate thing. And it's one thing for a doctor to acknowledge, you know, that, okay, what you're doing is great, keep it up. You know, it's another thing if they're passing that on to their patients to, you know, to as a potential, instead of, you know, going to typical prescription fixes that that we get.
Right. So when you spoke for 25 minutes with Dr. Esselstyn, what did he say?
But to be honest, it was the exact same thing that I saw him give his presentation to. I mean, he, you know, it was like almost like verbatim, and Dr. Esselstyn is an unbelievable person that I've had the pleasure to meet on several occasions now. And he's just, I wouldn't, in my mind, I wouldn't be here if I didn't run across the work and the effort that he put forth years ago. Because there's plenty of other variations out there, but the impact that he has put on my life, by calling me, I mean, for one, I mean, who does that? I mean, that's just like, that's unheard of. But the more people that I talk to that are fully aware of Dr. Esselstyn, they tell the same story, that he is so genuine, and that he doesn't hesitate to pick up the phone and call somebody, because his belief level is so high, as well as it should be, because, you know, he did the footwork, you know, he did he had the patients that were, you know, death patients, you know, they were, you know, given like not very long to live, get their life in order, or get their end of life terms in order and stuff, because there wasn't anything more that they could do for them, you know? So, you know, so he just went through, you know, you realize that you damage your endothelial cells and these are things that damage those cells, is your animal proteins, your meat, your dairy. So he just went down that path, and, you know, I bought into it. You know, I mean, like I what was I going to do? I mean, I died. You know, it's like, what are my options? I didn't like that experience. It wasn't fun. And like I said, I relive it every day. I can feel what it's like. Just the life just going out of my body, you know? So I was looking for something. I mean, the timing was perfect. And, you know, he just explained it to me, and this is, these are the studies that he did with certain people. This is the success rate that he's had. And I'm like, I'm in, you know, I'll give me that Kool-Aid, man. I'll drink it on down.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. He said he called you, and then you hightailed it over to the supermarket and you bought all these greens. And I'm wondering, like, you know, you said you'd seen his presentations. He said the same thing to you that he said in the presentations. Was there something about that call that, regardless of the content, kind of took it up a notch for you?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I've never even had a doctor call me anyway, you know, but for some...
The ones you're paying.
Some total stranger from the Cleveland Clinic calls me in Michigan. Somebody I've never met before has, you know, no connection with me whatsoever. I mean, yeah, regardless of what he said after that, I mean, that just set the tone for me at the character of this gentleman, and you know, it got my immediate attention. My belief level was off the charts. Nobody could have stopped me at that point in time because of the impression that he made on me with that phone call, let alone the information that was, you know, that he puts out there. But just that personal gratification for me was just a bond that I will always remember.
Mm. And then you say you bought this stuff and it rotted and you had to throw it out. So what did you do? Cause I mean, that's what I find as a kind of, you know, teacher and coach, is that people really get tripped up when they're in the kitchen and they just, you know, they have a way of thinking about food, of what consists of food, of what meals look like. And then they've got this whole new language and it's like, they're in a foreign country. They don't speak the language. Like, what did you do to learn the language of plant-based food preparation?
You know, it was just trial and error. I was in the pizza business for 25 years. That was the first job I ever had when I was 14 years old, was at a pizzeria. And at 21 years old, I opened up my own pizzeria. And I stayed in the business for just a little over 25 years. So I was, I like a commercial kitchen, but I used to make, you know, pizza, ribs, fish, lasagna, spaghetti, all that stuff. I enjoyed cooking, but I'm a pretty simplistic guy. So when it came to the plant-based, I mean, I was, it was a lot of salads at first, because I really didn't know a whole lot, but there was some recipes in, the Prevent Reverse, Heart Disease book, that a couple of simple ones, that I was able to pick up on. And, breakfast was probably the easiest thing to, adhere to, you know, because at first, it was like wheat and bran, shredded wheat with some almond milk or some soy milk with some fruits or whatever. But now I just eat oatmeal every day. I don't get sick of it. So,
what was your breakfast before you died?
Egg muffin on the way to work or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much. I wasn't much of a breakfast guy. You know, it was usually something on the way in, or maybe a bowl of cereal at best, you know, but usually a breakfast burrito or something like that on the way into work.
Uh-huh. So were there like resources that you found helpful? Because that's one of the things I have trouble figuring out for my clients is, you know, a lot of people are like, well, tell me what to do. Give me recipes. And I'm torn between like sending them to a website that has like 5,000 recipes because they can get overwhelmed versus just telling them, here's a couple, just do these for a while. Like, what worked for you?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I mean, there are a lot of recipes out there, but the recipes consist of stuff that you've never heard of before. And that's where the overwhelming sensation comes in is like, all right, I've got a list of ingredients. I've never even heard of these ingredients. I don't even know where to buy them. Do they sell them in the store, or what part of the store do I go to? You know, does it have to be, you know, a holistic store or what? So yeah, that can definitely be overwhelming. What ultimately worked for me is just finding a couple of key meals that I go to, because that's what we did. That's what we do anyway. I mean, we eat the same things pretty much over and over and over. You know, we have about, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 meals that we just, we might adapt a little bit, different spices or, you know, a different, like chicken can be like cooked in a lot of different ways, but you're still eating chicken, you know, and so you've got like staple menu items that all of us go through regardless of what nutrition path we follow, you know. So I just found a couple of key recipes that worked for me. You know, my go-to that I probably eat 80% of the time is brown rice, black beans, kale, and some other veggies, like maybe some zucchini or some yellow squash or some mushrooms, some onions, and I just mix it all up, and I'll throw some salsa in there or some balsamic vinegar and eat it up. And it's a pretty good sized bowl. It's about 5 or 6 cups of food in one sitting, you know, and that works for me. So that's probably my go-to meal. And there's different variations that I can, I'm kind of like a pizza. I could eat pizza every day, in my previous life before I died. And I wouldn't get sick of it because you can put different items on a pizza to make it taste different. You can have a cheese pizza, or you can have pepperoni pizza, or you can have a pizza with everything on it, you know, and it gives you a different taste. And that's kind of like what I look at my brown rice and beans. It doesn't have to be black beans. You know, throw in some pinto beans or some garbanzo beans or, you know, give it a little different flavor, you know, but it's still primarily beans and rice. And a leafy green, whether it be kale or spinach or collard greens, it doesn't matter. To give me a green and I'll eat it. And then different variations. And then my other,
you can tell tell the greens apart now.
Yeah.
You got your PhD in leafy greens.
Yeah, I'm an expert. Just ask me. But then my other split pea soup is one of my favorites to make. And I mean, one of the things that I found out was a blessing to me was a pressure cooker. I got one out there called the Instapot, which was just phenomenal. That's taken all the chores out of cooking and stuff. And it just makes it more so convenient. And there's a lot of different recipes that come along with that particular thing. So split pea soup and red lentil chili are probably my favorites, along with my brown rice and beans extravaganza, and then my oatmeal, and I'm good.
That goes against so much of what I was conditioned to think of as, you know, successfully feeding myself, you know, like the same thing every day. Like, I don't have to think about it. Whatever's in the cabinet, I can, you know, the food doesn't have to be beautiful looking in the fridge even. It's like, well, that's about to go. You throw that in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, because I look at food as just fuel. I mean, I don't care if I eat or not. I don't have that desire to, you know, it used to be you would see a commercial on TV or you would see a billboard driving on the road and they would make, you know, just something look just succulent where you just like, you weren't even hungry, but you saw it and it's like it was attractive and you wanted to go eat, whether it was that particular thing that you saw there that was advertised, or but it just put on a light bulb in your mind where it's like, okay, you need to eat. Now it's like I listen to my body. When my body, you know, says, hey, dude, you need some energy, then I'll eat. But typically, I never get that hungry feeling. And then when I do eat, I'm set for hours and just full of energy.
Was that a switch that flipped? Like, you know, so 25 years in the pizza industry, like pizza's a really rich, triggering food. Like I can just, you know, I can close my eyes and picture the TV commercial where the one slice is lifted off and the cheese is dripping down and the, you know, like pizza is a real trigger food. Like when you were, before you died, were you kind of in the thrall of these hyper palatable foods? And if so, how did you switch the mindset, not just the eating behaviors?
Well, one of the benefits for me was I mentioned that I had lost 40 pounds previously before I had my heart attack. When I lost that 40 pounds, it was over it was during a 10-week period, and it was a carb cycling system that I did by Chris Paulus was the kind of like the creator of it, and so I had already adapted to, because I wasn't happy with myself when I looked in the mirror and stuff. I was like, at the time I was like probably 215, 220 pounds. And, you know, not obese by any means, you know, but still not happy with myself when I looked in the mirror. And, so I made a determination to get back to what I remember my high school weight being, you know, when I graduated from high school and I got down there. And again, that was a system that was put in place. You know, I had made a determination that I wanted to change and give me a system to go by. And I'll follow that system and I'll tell you if it works or not. And so that worked for me. I mean, 40 pounds in 10 weeks is pretty doggone good. It's kind of typical to go plant-based, but so I had already adapted my eating pattern from that. So that kind of led into, it was a perfect lead into plant-based nutrition, because I had already cut out the fast foods and a lot of the processed foods and stuff. So I was eating pretty healthy, even though I was off of that. I had achieved the weight loss that I'd wanted to at that particular time. I had maintained that lifestyle, that carb cycling routine.
What is carb cycling?
Carb cycling, you had like 2 days of low carb foods, and then 1 day of high carb foods, and then another day of low carb foods, and a high day of high carb foods, and then it was like a four week revolving concept, and then one of the weeks was all a high carb week, so you had a plethora of choices off of this particular recipe menu of food to make, you know, and they were either high carb foods or low carb foods. And what essentially what it was, the concept was, is you're tricking your body into, it can't figure out what you're doing. So it's always burning calories. Because our body does a pretty good job of adapting to what we're doing. It kind of like read what we're doing. So the carb cycling was kind of a way to trick your body, and it was effective. I mean, it was it was immediate. You know, and a lot of times that's what it takes is you want to see results like pretty doggone quick in order to convince you, because if you're not seeing the results fairly quick, then you're not apt to stay on course, you know, and you're going to start steering towards the stuff that got you there in the first place, you know? So when it came to adapting to plant-based, I had already adapted to a better way of eating. So when it came to plant-based, it was just the, in my opinion, the ultimate way of eating. So it was a fairly smooth transition for me. Because I see people ask me all the time, you know, how do you do it? How do you know? It's like, I had an unfair advantage, you know, I mean, because of what I went through. I mean, that's just the dying, but even before that, I was kind of like set up for success, you know, but it took a decision at an amusement park, you know, in Ohio, at Cedar Point. I'm a roller coaster fanatic. And, you know, I was at an event and I just looked around and saw a lot of big people, a lot of obese people, struggling to get in roller coasters and stuff, you know, and I started to judge and then I kind of like was beating myself up internally. It's like, what gives you the right to judge somebody? You're not any better than they are just because you're not as big as they are. You're not happy. You're not anywhere near what you should be. So I had that light bulb moment go off in me. And that's what started the whole thing. I didn't know that it was going to lead to where it did, you know, but I'm glad that I had that aha moment. I think we've all had those in the past, you know, because nutrition and weight loss and stuff is like a roller coaster ride. Anyway, we go. I mean, I've gone up and down, up and down. I was at like 227 was my highest, and I get down to 200, 195, go back up 210. You know, we've all done, you know, that roller coaster ride. You know, but to see something as consistent as this. I mean, I've been plant based now for 2.5 years, and probably within the first 4 weeks of when I went plant-based, I got down to about 150 pounds. And I called Dr. Esselstyn. I said, people think I'm like withering away. He says, well, we haven't lost anybody yet from withering away, so you'll be fine.
So you're down from like 175 to 150?
Yeah, 150. And now I'm at like 155, and I've maintained 155 for over 2 years now. I mean, I haven't fluctuated 5 pounds one way or the other, you know, within 155. And that's just crazy. Cause I can eat as much as I want to. You know, I mean, at events, you know, that we can go to, I mean, like PlantStock, I saw you at PlantStock a couple weeks ago, and I always look forward to events like that because it's always food that I would never eat. Because it takes time to eat and stuff. And I just, so when I get around foods like that, I just like devour them. And they had some like amazing food there.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that. Cause they had like a pizza night, right? Do you make plant-based pizzas or is that too much of a trigger considering your past?
I do. No, I have made pizzas and it was really good too. It's just a matter of finding time to do some of this stuff. But I've actually got a couple of Engine 2 pizza crusts in my freezer right now at home. So when I get back, because I'm actually down in New Orleans right now, I'm just looking out in the hotel room at a river with barges like passing by, and it's just a beautiful sight. And I'm going to go out and run. I never ran in New Orleans before, so I'm going to go out and do a little bit of running, you know, which is another new, totally new thing to me that I don't think that I would have ever done had I not died and wanted to celebrate in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because before you died, you were working out 3-4 times a week. What's the what happened to your athleticism once you came back resurrected and went plant based?
My workouts consisted of pre-death. My workouts consisted of mainly weightlifting, weight training, and just basically keeping tone. And then I used to enjoy, or I still enjoy, spin classes because the gym that I was at had some like amazing spin classes, and that was always a great workout. Just bring out the sweat and just felt so good afterwards. So between that and just some basic weight training, a little bit of cardio was about it. And then I wanted to, one of the things after I had my heart attack, I went through cardio rehab, which I suggest for anybody that has had a heart attack, go through cardio rehab and take it serious, because there's some, I learned, so much in cardio rehab because I had them push the crap out of me. I'm like, I'm not your typical patient. You know, I'm going to force you to make me work harder. You know, when you ask me what my, you know, what level I think that my exercise is at, I'm going to downplay it so that you're going to bump it up, you know, whereas everybody else was doing the opposite. You know, they wanted it to lessen up a little bit. So I encourage anybody to go through cardio rehab. But I wanted to know what those feelings were when I pushed myself, you know, what to expect when I got back into the workout routine. So it took me a little while until I could get back into the gym. But once I got back into the gym, it was the same thing, a little bit of weightlifting. It was more cardio-based at that time, maybe a little bit of treadmill action, but a lot of spin classes. But I used to hate running, but on my 1 year anniversary of my, my rebirth, if you will, I wanted to do something kind of like special, you know? So I started to think, I'm like, well, people seem to like run a 5K for different events, you know, to celebrate something. I'm like, maybe I can find a 5K, you know, on close to the 1 year anniversary, you know? And so I started Googling it, you know, kind of like, in the back of my mind, I was hoping that I wouldn't find one. But sure enough, I did find one that was on the exact day of the 1 year anniversary. And so I had 4 weeks to train for it. So I found a training program, a program. I mean, that's what moves me. You give me a structured, something structured to follow and I can follow it. So I found this 4 week training program. First day was like 10 minutes on a treadmill. And after the 10 minutes, I didn't even get to the 10 minutes, you know, and I'm already thinking, man, this sucks, man. It's like, there ain't no way I'm going to do this. But I kept at it and, I ran the 5K on my 1 year anniversary and it felt absolutely phenomenal. It actually was a lot easier than what I thought it was going to be.
What was your time?
4 weeks. My time was, 26, just under 27 minutes.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it was like 10 degrees outside, too. It was freezing. You know, it was like March 28th, but 2015 in Michigan, it could be anything in Michigan. But it could be 70 or 80 degrees, or it could be like 0 degrees. And it was closer to 0 degrees. It was it was cold, you know. But yeah, it felt really good. So 4 weeks later, I ran a 10K. And then the bug kind of like got to me. I'm like, This is it. I'm gonna run. And that was something new to me. I had no idea what I was doing. And I had this mindset where I'm gonna like, all right, I'm gonna run like 12 5Ks in June. And I laid out all the different races that I was gonna do. I did three of them in about a 26 hour period. There was one on a Wednesday night, and then there was another one on the next Thursday at 6 o'clock in the evening. Then there is one, an hour drive at 9 o'clock at night. So I did like 3 5Ks in a short period of time, not knowing what I was doing. And I pretty much I didn't set myself up for success, you know, and I had some muscle damage and my 12 5Ks in the month of June didn't work out too good, you know, but I let myself heal and then started to educate myself and running a little bit, to get more attuned to how to do it the right way to, you know, because being plant-based, I mean, that's one of the benefits of plant-based is your body heals, so much quicker, you know, but you still got to do it right. So, you know, I just got a little bit more educated on that. And then ran a half marathon, a few months after that, which was pretty good, but that was, again, I was coming off of an injury, and I didn't give myself time to fully prepare for that one. I only had about 6 weeks to train for it, and I didn't put enough miles on my body. I mean, the most I'd ever ran up until that point was like 9 miles, and that was a struggle. So I didn't know if I was going to be able to do 13.1, but I did it. And that particular race called the Brooksy Way has a pretty infamous hill at about the 9 mile mark, and that hill just kind of like, I was doing pretty good up until that point, but that hill kind of like did me in, and the last three or four miles was a struggle for me. I mean, I was hurting pretty bad. I was still able to, I think I finished that one in like 2:10, just a little over two hours and 10 minutes. So for the first half I was at a pretty good pace because I was literally pretty much walking the last mile, mile and a half, walk, run type thing. But I was hurting bad, but now I do it the right now. I can go run every day. And, I mentioned that I'm down in New Orleans. So I'm going to go, a friend of yours and mine, Josh Lajani, who, just nailed his 100 miler with a hundo action. He's going to come down tomorrow, and, him and Jason, and Jason Cohen, and we're going to go out. They're going to take me around. We're going to go on, I don't know, about a 2 hour run. We'll see. Hopefully it won't be at their pace. It'll be at like my pace. And they'll give a,
you know, Josh has a way of making his pace your pace. I'm just warning you.
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, since he just ran the 100 miler like two days ago or 3 days ago, that he'll still be recovering. But I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, you know the pace for his 100th mile, right?
Yeah, yeah. And had he known that the guy that took second place was only like less than a minute ahead of him, I think that pace would have even been quicker. So
yeah. All right. So. You mentioned, you know, waking up in the hospital with your 18-year-old son. So obviously you didn't make this change all by yourself, and right, you're part of this family constellation. I'm wondering, like, what was it like? You know, I don't know who was living at home with you at the time, and you know who wasn't. But what was it like? You know, navigating this change around other people who knew a different guy and who were eating, you know, according to their own agendas.
Well, as far as at home, it was just me and my son lived together. So that was the easy part, because I've heard of it would be a lot more challenging. And I know that people do have challenges out there where, you know, you've got a couple or you've got a spouse or whatever, and one of them wants to do it and the other one's kind of like, nah, making fun of them or something like that. So luckily, I didn't have to endure that that type of pressure. You know, I was able to do what I wanted to do, and I didn't have to worry about anybody else when I was at home. My son, he, you know, 18 years old at the time, he was still in school. He was and it's another one of those kind of look back moments. It's like, holy cow, man! It's like, if you're going to have a heart attack, should have been like before that, because 4 weeks before I had my heart attack, my son's a wrestler, very, very good wrestler. And he was in the state tournament, and he was ranked second in the state at the time. And this was after like taking 10 months off of the sport, because he kind of like, got sick of it for the most part, but he decided to get back into it right at the last minute, which I'm glad that he did. But he was in the semifinals, and the pressure, because there was, you know, a little bit of hype, people, because he came back without, you know, practicing a lot and stuff, people didn't know what to expect, you know, so there was a lot of people that were like watching that, and so the nerves, you know, as a parent, watching that at a place like it was at the Palace in Michigan, which is where the Pistons play, you know, so it's a pretty big venue, you know, so a lot of people there and stuff. And you would think that you know, it, from a parent's perspective, it's going to have a heart attack. It's going to be watching your kids perform in front of thousands of people, you know, at that level. But he ended up taking third in the States, you know, but, you know, saw Clad and that, you know, it didn't happen there. That would have been tragic had I had a heart attack watching my kid wrestle. So he's not home that much. So he'll eat whatever I fix. You know, so he would hop on board fully if I was better at, you know, preparing stuff and always having it available. But I don't, because I'm just not home that much. I'm pretty active guy. So I didn't have to worry about any family issues, but at work, you know, people see it and to this day, and there's still people that will make fun of, you know, what I eat, you know, eating grass, you know, everybody's got their little comments. But it's all for fun, basically. I mean, I think that I've had an impact with some people, not necessarily, to go plant-based, but I see people eating better and I see people, different people losing weight, you know, putting plans together. So I think from a health conscious perspective, the people that are around me every day, I think that there is a, there's an impact there. I wish that there was more of an impact, but you know, it's something that'll come in time. You know, it's like, even with me jumping on board with Dr. Esselstyn's plan, you know, and drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, if you will, the only thing that's gonna prove if this works is longevity. You know, I can't prove right now that I wouldn't have had, you know, I mean, I haven't had a heart attack. Hopefully, I never will have another heart attack. In my mind, I'm setting myself up so I'm pretty much heart attack proof. You know, within reason. But you know, people are watching me. You know, they're and people. People are watching, you know, different people that hop on board the plant-based lifestyle. You know, the people watch you because, unfortunately, some people want to see you fail so that they can say, see, that's why I didn't do it. It doesn't work anyway. You know, so knowing that people watch, that gives me even more of a drive to stay 100%. Because since I did it, I've been 100%. I haven't compromised one single bit, knowingly. Anyway, I'm sure that I've eaten something somewhere that probably had some oil in it that I didn't know about. But for the most part, you know, I'm 99.9% compliant, for the last 2.5 years now. So people are watching. Some people kind of like want to see you fail. But the longer you go, the more attention it gains and the more power it gets and the more momentum that is created. And I think that we're seeing that, in our society now is, you're going to grocery stores now, you're going to restaurants where you've got these, vegan options. And I don't like the term vegan for me per se, because it there's a lot more to veganism than eating. For me, it was all about the health. It was all about, you know, the food. So that's why I much prefer plant-based or plant strong or plant perfect. You know, it's all about plants to me. I mean, there are many other benefits that come along with going to a plant-based nutrition that I am learning and adapting to and jumping on board with, you know, but it's all about health for me. And so we've got a lot more options than we ever had before. And I think that's going to continue because people see success, many success stories. I mean, another good friend of ours, Tim Kaufman, I mean, he does an incredible job of exposing his story and sharing with others. And I mean, right now he's in the process of sharing like 30 days worth of success stories from all different walks, you know, and so there's some momentum there. And I think that's going to be a sustainable momentum, you know, and like back in Michigan, I say back again, because I'm like looking out at another barge going by. But we've got a you know, something that was created about 3 years ago, you know, our PBNSG, which is plant-based nutrition support group, you know, started by Paul Chatlin. I mean, he kind of like went through it. It was a different experience, but he went through Dr. Russellson, and we've got this connection that was made. And so he wanted to pay forward what he had learned. So he started this group, started out with like, a handful of people, led to, and then I think he might've had 100 people, at one of his first like get togethers. And now that's evolved into, he's got over 2,500 members now. And he brings in, people like yourself and Dr. Russellson and Colin Campbell and all these phenomenal people that have done the research and that are wanting to get the word out, you know. So you're seeing little explosions like this and a lot of momentum and it's encouraging, you know. It makes it a little bit easier. It's not like we're on an island out by ourselves.
What's in store for you, maybe, you know, in terms of running or activism? Like what's up for you in the next year?
Well, right now I'm training for a marathon. I attended a marathon back in April, there was an 18-week training program that I was going through, and then in week 16 I pulled a hip flexor strain, which I didn't know what it was at the time, but it kind of like set me back a little bit. But I still attempted the marathon. It was doing pretty good, and then at about I wasn't feeling any pain at all, you know, and then at about 16.5-17 miles, that hip flexor strain kind of like raised its ugly head and said, hey, remember me? And it's like, and that kind of like put me down. It was another cold event, thank you Michigan. But it was freezing, and as soon as I started slowing down, I just like, I just froze. I mean, all the sweat and stuff that was in, you know, my clothes and stuff, I couldn't go on. So that was pretty disappointing for me, but, you know, not discouraging enough to make me stop, you know. So now I'm training for a marathon in November 6th, I believe it is. And hopefully I'll bust that out. And I'm going to do it one step at a time, but I tell you what, man, it's like you guys and your ultras and your the 50Ks and the 50 milers and stuff. And then talking to, the runner with Scott Jurek at Plant Sock was just inspirational as all get out, and meeting Rich Roll and talking to him. And we've got an opportunity. Actually, we've got Rich Roll coming in, to speak in the end of October, and he agreed to come in a day early to do a little fun run with us. So that's going to be a blast. So I'm going to do one step at a time. I want to get a marathon under my belt, you know, but I really have a passion to do a little bit more than just a marathon, whether it be start out with a 50K, maybe next, and just see where it goes, you know, because, it's, I don't know, guys like you and Josh and this, I don't know, there's a little bit of inspiration there that, you have to make it sound so doggone fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're an inspiration for me as well as for many other people. So, I'm really glad you decided to hang around for a while on this plane of existence, because it's a better world with you in it and with you and watching you kind of come into your own power and grace of running and being a such a powerful ambassador for this way of living and eating that that we just want to tell everybody about.
Yeah. Hey, no, I appreciate those kind words, and I feel an obligation. I mean, it's once you know this stuff, you can't, it's hard to keep it in not share it, you know? So, I mean, I don't know why I survived, but I survived. And because of my survival, I'm not just going to like sit on my hands and not do anything about it. I've learned some incredible stuff and I want to share that with everybody. And, you know, I'm, you look at me as a guinea pig. I mean, I came across a study that said for people that were runners before they had a heart attack and had a heart attack, they shouldn't run over 30 miles a week, you know, because their mortality rate goes up. You know, they didn't talk about anything about plant-based nutrition in there. So I feel that I can prove that theory wrong. And, you know, so I'm kind of like a guinea pig. So, you know, keep an eye on me and see what happens. I mean, I'm not naive about it. I'm doing it the right way. I you know, get stress tests and stuff on a regular basis just to make sure everything's on the up and up. So, you know, so yeah, keep an eye on me and then I'll let you know if I'm successful or not. Only time will tell.
Cool. In terms of keeping an eye on you, do you have like a blog or a website or Facebook? What's the best way for folks to connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything going on. Facebook is probably the best thing for me. I don't have a blog. I've been wanting to, but I know there's a lot of time involved there, and you know, some of you guys that do it, and I know the time it takes, and I just haven't got there yet. Although I would like to.
So I'll put a link to your Facebook profile.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay, great. And then folks can follow you and you can decide if you want to friend him back or just be a shining beacon out there leading the way. Well, Dave Willits, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Howard, I appreciate you having me.
All right. Be well. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes with links at plantyourself.com/175. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 174 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com, where you can also sign up for the weekly email newsletter. Thanks to Plant Yourself podcast patrons Josina, Michelle Holt, Colleen Peck, Alan Christensen, Leah Stoller, Victoria Dolomanova, Elsbeth Feldman, the mysterious Michelle X, David Bizek, Jenville Kinofsky, Tina Ahern, Tina Scharf, Christine Nielsen, Rachel Behrens, Melissa Cobb, Ellen Kennelly, Mary Jane Wheeler, Amanda Hatherley, Amy Good, Tammy Black, Barbara Whitney, Elizabeth Clifton, Dominic Morrow, Brittany Porter, Anthony Disson, Lynn McClellan, Kim Harrison. I did it backwards. It was like singing the ABC song backwards. I tripped up a couple of times. But thank you all for your generous support of the podcast. If you would like to support the show, you can share this and other episodes on social media via email, and you could write a review on iTunes. That's so important to us. I just got a new one last week. It says, "My go-to podcast for all things WFPB!" ! And WFPB, of course, is the phrase coined by my co-author and mentor and friend Colin Campbell, whole food plant-based. And this review was by healthy_mindbody. And healthy_mindbody says, "Howard's lineup of interviewees touches on every aspect of the whole food plant-based lifestyle, really driving home the message that now more than ever, what we put in our mouths every day affects not only our health, but also the health of our planet and the well-being of all our fellow earthlings. A must subscribe for everyone, regardless of where you are on the plant-based continuum." So, wow, a must subscribe for everyone. So I only have about 6.99999 billion people to go, and that will become a reality. In garden news, the fall greens are popping their heads out, and we are now in a very friendly life or death competition with various critters and varmints for the last of the fall harvest, for the pecans, for the scuppernung grapes, and for the sweet potato greens. So we're trying to figure out how to coexist, as all of us need to do, in a world where there are multiple ecosystems, multiple niches, lots of competition, and we're trying to play fair and still get the bounty of our good work. That's it for this week. So as always, be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize. All the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.